live show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, and it's been my absolute pleasure to have been the host for the show for the last 6 years. In that time, I've spoken to reams of inspiring and knowledgeable experts about the field of integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology. My guest today is returning to the show and certainly fits the bill when it comes to being both inspiring and knowledgeable. Dr. Sam Watts has a background in cancer research and is now an Ayurvedic and lifestyle practitioner. I'm speaking to Dr. Watts over the internet at his practice in West Sussex. Hi Sam, great to have the chance to speak again.
Thank you so much for having me back, Robin. It's always great to be here.
Well, in fact, last time we spoke, the tables were turned. You were interviewing me, I remember. Anyway.
That was great. Yeah, thank you for that. That was awesome.
The topic for today's show came about because I caught you raving enthusiastically on social media about adaptogens, a topic that really excites me too. And for any listeners who are thinking, adapter what? Hold tight. All will be revealed. This is a great topic. So, yeah, I'm always trying to get my guests to speak about adaptogens, getting questions in there about them because they're so amazing. But this is actually a first, a complete show dedicated to adaptogens. So let's get straight down to it. Can you give us your elevator pitch? Sell us the concept of adaptogens in less than a minute.
Less than a minute. So adaptogens are ultimately tonic herbs that keep our body in a state of balance that facilitates optimal health. There's something called biological response modifiers. And in the Western 21st century world we're living in, where we're exposed to huge stresses and, you know, turmoils and things like that, if now more than ever, we need these response modifiers to keep our bodies working in a set parameter of balance. And that's what adaptogens uniquely offer us and afford us in less than a minute.
Yeah, very good. All right, thanks. So how would you define one? What exactly is an adaptogen?
I think that the clue is very much in the name, you know, in as much as the Western label of these herbal medicines, adaptogens. You know, these herbs have been used in Ayurvedic medicine and traditional Chinese medicine for thousands of years, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But the term adaptogen is a Western label. And what it does is exactly what it says on the tin. So they're called adaptogens because they continually help the body adapt and change depending upon the conditions the internal environment of the body finds itself in. And there's nothing else in existence that has that capacity. There's no other herbal medicines, there's no other pharmaceutical drugs that have this capacity to modify continually, almost second by second, the way the body's working. So if we're stressed, they calm us down. If we're lethargic, they can stimulate us. If we have a racing mind, they can slow it down. If we need our mind to work more efficiently, they can speed it up. It doesn't really matter what the context is. They have the ability to identify what is working suboptimally and then bring that into a state of balance. And that's such a profound opportunity for us because I think most people will find, you know, over the course of a day, they're moving out of balance. They haven't slept well, maybe that night, and the next day they're tired. Adaptogens will take the edge off. They're not a panacea for all ills. They don't resolve all problems. But rather than being incredibly tired after a bad night's sleep, they will help to reduce the fatigue we're experiencing. You know, if you're going through a really stressful period at work, the stress is going to be there, but it's going to reduce the impact of that stress on our immune counts, our inflammatory markers, our mood, whatever it may be. So this term adaptogen very, very clearly gives a nod to what these amazing herbal medicines do in terms of keeping the body working within this optimal parameter of functionality, which is exactly what they are.
Very interesting. So, I mean, this kind of ability of a single compound to act in different ways, depending on the needs of the body that's consuming it, I mean, it's completely uncanny, really. It's like magic. Does anyone have any idea how this can happen, how they work?
Yeah, I think it's like a lot of these herbal medicines, you know, lots of very open-minded and quite forward-thinking researchers have said, well, if these systems of medicine that have been advocating them for thousands of years, you know, Ayurvedic medicine has been advocating the merits of adaptogens for well over 3,000 years, traditional Chinese medicine likewise. And they've said, well, surely things that don't really work don't last. So they've had this history of continual use. is it not worth just teasing this apart, looking at what's actually going on here? Do these herbs that are labeled as adaptogens actually have quantifiable mechanisms that we can prove in terms of the way they help the body to modify itself? And they've done that now, and the research is incredibly robust, and it's very incredibly conclusive, and it shows that whilst there are many mechanisms within the body that adaptogens can impact upon and work on, the main one, which I'm sure a lot of listeners will probably have heard of, is the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which essentially is how the body communicates, how the body regulates homeostasis. And particularly the adrenal aspect, the adrenal glands and all the cortisol and stress response that modifies. As we experience stress, as we have less sleep, as we have higher inflammation, whatever it may be, that HPA axis moves out of balance. And that's where all the problems stem from. What adaptogens have been proven to do is continually bring the HPA axis back into a place of normality, irrespective of whether that's a hypo, a fatigue state, or a hyperactivated state, doesn't really matter. So the primary, it's not the only, but the primary mechanism that adaptogens work through is regulation of the HPA axis. And that's so profound because, again, thinking about the crazy, fast-paced 24-hour culture that we live in the 21st century here in the West, I think in most people's HPA axis takes an absolute battering. Through stress. And whilst meditation and yoga and nature immersion, all these things obviously modulate the HPA axis, having something like adaptogens that keep a lid on it 24 hours a day, long term, I think is an opportunity that it's mad to miss out on. I think it's such a brilliant thing to be tapping into.
Mm. Now, a word you threw in the middle of all that, which I think is kind of central to the topic of adaptogens, was homeostasis. Do you want to just enlarge upon what homeostasis means?
Yeah, well, I think it's the be-all and end-all, isn't it? I think in terms of overall health, homeostasis, there's something called the homeostasis model now, which is this idea that if we're looking at exceptional health, looking at exceptional longevity, looking at exceptional recovery from any disease, including cancer, the idea that to allow the body to facilitate that, it has to be working from a place of optimal balance, where every cell, every body system, every organ, the body as one, is working from a place of balance. And that balance is called homeostasis. It's where the body is functionally working from a profoundly strong platform. And there's lots of things that help to support homeostasis, obviously, our daily routines, our diet, et cetera, et cetera. But when we're talking biochemically, when we're looking at biochemical homeostasis, herbal medicines and adaptogens have this incredible ability to move us into that place of homeostasis. And if we start looking at the mechanisms of disease, if you tease apart the research around Alzheimer's disease and many heart diseases and particularly cancers, most of that research shows that the seeds for those diseases initially are sown because the body is existing outside of a place of homeostasis. So, our immune markers are down for a period of time, and that allows a healthy cell to become pre-malignant and fully malignant, a process that might have been picked up on and prevented if homeostasis had been operating, from, or whatever it may be. So that homeostasis concept, the model, is so important to living and experiencing in a very healthy, vital, and disease-inhibiting body. And adaptogens play a key role, not the only role, but a key role in helping us to maintain that physiological state.
Mm. Okay, so a place not to depart from if we don't have to, and to get back to quickly if we do.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because we look at, so to be, for something to be labelled as an adaptogen now, from the Western perspective, it has to fulfil something called the four N's. So the criteria for an adaptogen clinically is four N's. So it needs to be nourishing, so which means it needs to tonify and nourish the whole body. It needs to be anabolic, strengthening. It needs to be normalizing, so it needs to have that ability to increase if something is low and reduce if something is high. It needs to be non-specific, so it needs to be able to work across multiple organ systems at the same time. And it needs to be non-toxic. It needs to be proven to be safe to be used in low dose, long term. And what those things do, normalizing, nourishing, you know, that's essentially saying moving into homeostasis. That's what it is. It's supporting, it's nourishing, it's tonifying the body on a continual basis so that we're operating from this very safe, health promoting platform. And I think those four ends are incredibly powerful. I mean, a lot of people talk about these four ends. They're very famous in the world of herbal research. But I think if you actually meditate, ruminate on what those four ends mean, what they actually afford us, mm-hmm. it's pretty significant, because it's saying, well, this singular approach, just one very small approach in the overall platform of self-care, is giving us these evidence-based gains that are not just working on a small function of the body, but the whole body, everything that's operating within our skin, you know, at the boundary of our body, is being kept in such a strong place through these adaptogenic compounds. And I think it's a beautiful model. And I think it's such a shame that adaptogens aren't widely known about in the West. You know, if you speak to people who have been raised, lots of my family's very close friends are Sri Lankan and Indian. Adaptogenic herbs are, for us, like vitamin C or chicken soup. You know, they grew up with it. They know about them. They're a mainstay of daily life. They have adaptogens in cooking, and they take them as medicines preventatively. And I often think, imagine if you could transplant that acceptance, that knowledge, into any given Western community. I'm convinced it could have a significant impact upon health profiles and disease profiles and overall levels of mental and physical well-being because of those four ends. So it's exciting.
That's a powerful message. I absolutely see that. Well, it's interesting that you've alluded to this kind of dual nature of adaptogens, in as much as there's something new about them. The word is relatively new, I think. Yet the things that are included in the list of adaptogens, they've been used forever, basically. Yeah. So it's a funny situation.
Yeah.
And I assume that really it's the beginnings of a Western appreciation of why these things have been used for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's this juxtaposition, I suppose. Again, you go back 3,000 years and the primary Ayurvedic texts are talking about them, but it wasn't until during the tail end of World War II and into the Cold War that adaptogens really shot to fame in the West, because particularly Russian scientists were looking initially for what they colloquially termed a superhero pill. They wanted some kind of natural compound that could make their fighter pilot jets fly better and faster for longer. Things that were going to work upon the muscular systems, the psychometric systems of the body. And then they started experimenting with ginseng, and that evidence was very profound. And then it was transferred across to sporting endeavors, looking at what herbs can support better stamina, better strength, better recovery times. And it was in 1957 that the term adaptogen was actually labeled as a nutraceutical compound. But that doesn't detract from the fact that everything that they were alluding to, all of the benefits that they were saying these compounds possess, they've been known about for an incredibly long time.
Right.
They haven't had that label, but all of the multifactorial benefits are incredibly well described and well documented in, like I say, in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. So it's a new concept in the West, but it's an old concept in the East.
Science catching up with experience.
Finally.
Yeah. Interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with Zero Zilch Zip. .co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So So I thought, you know, be worthwhile making the point that this ability to behave in this kind of supernatural way of responding as needed is the territory only of natural substances. As far as I'm aware, the ingenuity of man has never been sufficient to create an adaptation, has it?
Yeah, which speaks volumes, doesn't it? You know, I think same as you, Robin, and Yesterlife, you know, none of us is a, in my view, is not about alternative medicine where it's, you know, it's forsaking conventional medicine. It's about that integrated model where we take the best of both worlds. But at the same time, we do need to open our eyes and say that that what you've just spoken about speaks volumes. The fact that all the advancements in pharmacology, there's still, like I say, as far as I'm aware, I'm not a pharmacologist, but as far as I'm aware, there's not a synthetic drug that can modify the way it behaves once it's ingested, depending upon the environmental conditions it finds within the body. The fact that there's these completely natural, incredibly safe, time-tested plants, herbal medicines that have the capacity to do that, I think is so important. And I just feel that given the benefits, given the evidence now, to not be tapping into these benefits is it doesn't make any sense, particularly that there's not just one adaptogen. There are, you know, over 10, there's lots and lots of different types of adaptogens. So one of the questions we get asked quite a lot is, well, I've read about ashwagandha, or I've read about Tulsi, or whatever it may be, and I see on the contraindications that I shouldn't be taking it because of X, Y, and Z. You know, there's lots of other adaptogens. So I've never come across a person who couldn't take an adaptogen based upon a contraindication, because if one adaptogen is contraindicated, you can always guarantee there will be one that isn't. So it's they're incredibly clever, they're incredibly intuitive the way they work, and they're very safe. Like I said, one of the four N's being non-toxic. These aren't herbs that come with toxicity. These aren't herbs that are designed to be used for short periods of time. You know, lots of herbal medicines, they're designed for acute use. You take them for a couple of weeks to clear an infection, or a couple of months to regulate. But adaptogens are designed to be used at low to moderate dose indefinitely. That's how they are designed, and they've been proven to be safe in that capacity. So yeah, it's virtually all reward with no risk in its broadest sense.
Amazing. And, you know, the beauty of it all is that there's simply not a risk of creating an imbalance, right? You can do with any kind of substance that got a singular mechanism, that such as blocking or suppressing or whatever, you know, something that's always moving in the same direction. There's always a danger that you overdo it.
Yeah. And that's the unique quality, in that if you're taking an adaptogen, say, because some adaptogens have more of a slightly different energy ratio. So some adaptogens are naturally more calming and some are naturally more stimulating. But say, for example, you were suffering with tiredness or fatigue and you chose a more stimulatory adaptogen, like you say, it doesn't work in a one-way direction. If you start taking that and after a couple of months you feel the energy improving, and then you cross over and it maybe hyperstimulates you and you can't sleep and you're feeling a little bit wired, almost like a caffeine high, if it wasn't adaptogenic, that would keep on getting worse. But adaptogenic compounds would identify through the HPA axis that I'm hyperstimulated. My nervous system is hyperstimulated. So those adaptogenic compounds then begin to reverse. They downregulate until that happy medium is found. And again, I can say with absolute sincerity, I've never come across someone clinically who's had an adverse reaction to an adaptogen, if they've been using it in the correct way and the correct dose. Mm. And I say that with absolute sincerity across probably, you know, over 1,000 people. Mm. So it's that just unique ability to continually modify based upon where we are, not even this day, but this hour, this minute. It's working, the HPA axis is working every second of the day. It's modulating and controlling and regulating every second of the day. And therefore the adaptogens are working in the same way in conjunction with that. So it's this reactive real-time balancing, which is just such an amazing line. It's such an amazing concept.
It is. So if we get just a little bit esoteric for a minute, I mean, science is showing more and more the interactive nature of the way that it's, what things work in both directions between us and our environment, and our internal environment and all those bugs in there, and just how much synergy there is in the whole thing in keeping us well. And I mean, the way you describe adaptogens It's like they're working with us. That's what it feels like. It's not like something to force our body to respond in a particular way. They're actually cooperating with us.
Yeah. And that's unique in pharmaceutical medicine, but it's also unique in herbal medicine. Because in lots of herbal medicines, you know, you say someone's got a cold and they take echinacea. That's not really working with our body. That's just coming into the body with antimicrobial impacts, immune stimulating impacts to clear a viral or bacterial infection. But it's still coming in almost as a sledgehammer to resolve a problem. It doesn't downregulate or modify based upon what it finds. It's not necessarily working with us. It's supporting us. Adaptogens, like you said, are the complete opposite side of the spectrum in that they're coming in. It's almost like an advanced recce unit in a military organization where it's going into the body and it's just assessing, it's just reviewing, you know, what's going on here, what's the environment here, what's the landscape here, and it's not coming in and artificially modulating the body. It's coming in and modulating the systems of the body that naturally control it, and that's a very different mechanism. Mm. It's not doing it itself. It's supporting the body's own systems to self-regulate. And that's got to be the most effective model, you know, where we're educating and training the body to recognize what homeostasis looks like. And that's quite a key point, because there's a lot of work showing how the body how the body recognizes homeostasis. If someone has been out of homeostasis a very long time, and there's research looking at long-haul airline pilots who for 30 or 40 years have operated virtually with no circadian rhythm. They're having breakfast in the middle of the night. They're having lunch, you know, in the evening. They're crossing international time zones. They've had, you know, 3-4 decades outside of homeostasis. And when they retire, there's almost that sense of my body doesn't know what homeostasis is now. It's spent more of it, of my life outside of it than I have within it. And it's lost that sense. It's lost that intuitive consciousness of what homeostasis looks like for that body at that time. And it's quite hard to claw that back after that period of time, whereas it's not saying adaptogens can fix that overnight, but what it can do is it can help the systems of the body, the endocrine system, the nervous system, the HPA axis system, to say, these are the parameters that you should typically be operating with, and trying to move those back. Same after grief, you know, we see quite a lot of people who have lost loved ones, and that's, you know, the most stressful thing we can experience. And of nothing, including an adaptogen, can take the edge off that grief. What it can do is it can buffer, it can reduce the physiological and biochemical damage that grief does within the body. You're still going to feel the same level of trauma and grief emotionally, but that trauma isn't going to be having the same catastrophic damage that it might be having if we've got these adaptogens to buffer. It creates a ceiling on how much dysregulation those emotional traits and states can induce, and again, it's just another feather in the cap of these very amazing herbal medicines. Mm,
that's an extraordinarily good thing to have, resource for people who are often in that place in situations like that. You're a bit empty-handed, aren't you?
Very empty-handed.
Tough it out is the usual thing that happens. Okay, so can we take a little bit of a look at the science behind adaptogens now? I'm interested to know how the science measures up. I mean, is it still all too easy for people to dismiss them as unproven, or is that getting a bit harder now?
Yeah, you can't. I think you would almost hang yourself out to dry if you were to publicly put your name to saying, well, these adaptogens, they sound great on paper, but actually there's no evidence to validate or support the statements you're making. Yeah, going back, like I said, the first studies going back to 1957, and from 1957 all the way up to 2022, every year there are more and more clinical studies and clinical trials that have been published looking at not just at how adaptogens work, but the impacts they have. The research into how they work is almost a done deal. No one's really looking at that now, because it's almost like saying, well, how does gravity work? It's been done. It's been done to death. The mechanisms are clear. Most of the mechanisms are clear. What the research now is looking at, well, okay, if it works via this way in the body, what are the reliable, consistent benefits that affords? And, you know, that's like a who's who of staying healthy. You know, if we're looking at the Western peer-reviewed published evidence around the physiological responses of adaptogenic use, what does it show? It shows that it's proven to improve energy, It's shown to improve mitochondrial function in the cells, so increasing energy output at the cellular level. One of the big things, particularly in the context of the cancer arena, is the immune parameters. Probably, maybe the most important calling card of adaptogens is these immune modulating, immune tonifying benefits. There is robust evidence around how adaptogens, they don't hyperstimulate immunity, they don't move us into kind of an autoimmune risk factor, but they keep our immune counts exactly where they need to be. And looking around here, things like chemotherapy induced neutropenia, a really big problem. The number of people having to suspend or change their chemotherapeutic regimes because they're neutropenic, very clear evidence around how adaptogens can help elevate the immune counts during chemotherapy. Obviously, in complete accordance with the consultant, making sure there's no herb drug interactions, but that evidence is incredibly strong. Okay, and we can touch on that in a bit probably, but looking at organ function, we know adaptogens, the evidence is there around how adaptogens help to regulate overall functionality of our key organs, so our heart, our liver. That evidence is incredibly compelling, keeping our heart rhythms, our heart rate, cholesterol levels, all of these kinds of things working properly, regulating blood sugar levels. If you look at some of the public health data, insulin resistance is now being heralded, I suppose, as one of the biggest risk factors for things that are going to kill us, Alzheimer's, dementia, heart disease, cancer. If our cells are insulin resistant, things go wrong very quickly. Most adaptogens are proving to help regulate our blood glucose insulin profiles. They reduce inflammation. The evidence is clear how these adaptogens, they lower inflammation. Inflammation is the root cause of virtually every chronic disease. They help to balance our hormones. The list goes on, but the point remains that these adaptogens help to control and balance the key systems of the body in the way that make our body feel happier and healthier and more vital and more energized. And I do think if you look at the research, umbrella it and look into it all, I do think it probably stacks up more in the anti-cancer, cancer-specific arena, because that's where it's perhaps been tested the most. If we start looking at herbs like rhodiola, ashwagandha, ginseng, and we streamline the research by disease, there's probably more research specifically in cancer than there is anywhere else. And that's exciting because that's probably where most people can get such a very, very evidence-based and profound benefit.
Good. Okay. So how about the substances themselves? So these are all natural substances, as we said, and in fact, you described them all as herbs. Is that correct to do that? And what would you want to go through what they are?
Yeah, so there's quite a few different types of adaptogens. It's interesting that lots of the main adaptogens, and I'll go through the ones that I favor, but it's interesting that most of the very powerful adaptogens, they come from roots.
Okay.
They come from the root of the medicine. And I find that quite interesting, because what does a root do for a plant? A root grounds it, it nourishes it, it stabilizes it, it protects it. Without the root, the plant can't exist. And it's no coincidence, I don't think, that these adaptogens, not all of them, but the really strong ones, come from these compounds found exclusively in the root of the medicine, because they root us, they ground us, they protect us, they nourish us. And in Ayurveda, that's a really key signpost to how we use these herbs. So in terms of the herbs themselves, they're singular herbs, they're completely natural, they're not hybrids, they're not modified, they're not going in and extracting compounds and then repackaging them. They're just pure. They're pure ground dried herbs. Okay, so the ones that, and these do vary depending upon individual circumstances and what you're trying to choose. But the real heavyweight adaptogens that most people will be using and where the research is strongest are herbs like ashwagandha. Okay, rhodiola or Arctic root is revered as the most singular powerful adaptogen of them all. It doesn't matter if you're looking at that from the Western perspective, the Ayurvedic perspective, the Chinese perspective, all of them are singing from the same hymn sheet, which is that rhodiola is the strongest adaptogen. If someone's really having a hard time, if they are immunocompromised, if they are chronically stressed, if they're going through traumatic grief, whatever it may be, if they turn their their mind inwards and look at themselves and say, I am out of balance. It doesn't matter which way you cut this, whether it's physically or emotionally, I'm out of balance. I'm not operating from a place of strength here. The herb that we usually recommend to help move that body back into balance is rhodiola. Mm. It's incredibly effective in that capacity. It's a very, very important anti-cancer herb. So ashwagandha, I take 2,000 milligrams of ashwagandha every day. And I've done that for, you know, as long as I can remember. And unless my circumstances change, I'll probably do it to my dying day, because it's, you know, it's, I don't need the strength of rhodiola right now, but ashwagandha is almost like a middle ground. It's incredibly nourishing. It's strengthening. It improves energy. It helps sleep. It modifies stress. It's an immune tonic. It's got proven anti-cancer, anti-Alzheimer's, and anti-heart disease benefits. So it's kind of like an antidote to the threat of Western living. You know, I often think about how, you know, you have to talk about things, lots of diseases. The single biggest risk factor for most chronic diseases is living in a developed country. Mm. That's the single biggest risk factor.
Good point.
Why? Because life is so fast. It's faster than our organ systems were designed evolutionary to deal with. What does ashwagandha do? It helps our body to better thrive in an environment that perhaps it's not suited to, in terms of 24-hour culture, blue light, digital stimulation, poor sleep, poor food, whatever it may be. And that doesn't mean it gives us license to live an unhealthy lifestyle and not pay the price. It's saying, well, let's try and live a healthy lifestyle and mop up the damage with adaptogens like ashwagandha. So rhodiola is brilliant. Ashwagandha is brilliant. Ginseng is probably the most famous Siberian ginseng. I think everyone, it's a bit like St. John's wort or echinacea. Most people know about ginseng. And that was the first adaptogen to be studied. That was the one from 1957. Herbs like tulsi, you know, which you can have as a tea, licorice, turmeric. So they're kind of the main ones. But if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, actually, this sounds really, really good, and I'd like to tap into these benefits, the first ones that I would recommend exploring would be either ashwagandha, rhodiola, or Siberian ginseng. They would be the three that I would recommend, because they're having the best safety profiles. They're incredibly well tolerated. You can get them from any health food shop, and the evidence is most robust.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brilliant. So you've only spoken so far about using one of these. Do you ever get people using two together or more?
Yeah, very commonly.
All right.
So here we move into a slightly different context. So as a preventative, usually you only use one. So if everything's going relatively well, you classify or label yourself as being pretty healthy and you want to stay that way, usually low to moderate dose single herb use is enough to keep us that way. But say suddenly something changes, you know, you get, you know, bad osteoarthritis that suddenly develops, or you get a diagnosis of some kind of chronic disease, or someone in your family dies and you're going through grief, something changes that threatens your homeostasis, then it's very common to combine into something called a polyherbal formulation, a multi-herb formulation, where you begin to add in usually three different adaptogens into a singular prescription, something called, a polyherbal prescription, which then moves into something called herbal synergy, which is where the whole is greater than the sum of the individual parts. So if you add in ashwagandha, rhodiola, and ginseng, you get more than the sum parts of those three by combining them, because they work and synthesize and accentuate the compounds found within each. And that's that, again, if we're thinking now about actual disease management, and particularly, again, in the cancer arena, if you're looking at the very famous anti-cancer herbal formulations, or the formulations that have been tested for chemotherapeutic side effect alleviation, usually they're multi-herbal formulations. And if you look at the research around multi-herbal formulations compared to single herb prescribing, you almost always see a better outcome from the multi-herb than from the single. And that's definitely not needed if you're fit and well and want to stay that way. But if you're trying to manage a pathology or a problem, it definitely makes sense to do that. And it doesn't need to be complex. It might just be that you go, you know, to your health food shop, and rather than just buying ashwagandha, you might buy, you know, your ashwagandha and your rhodiola, and you might just start using both. It doesn't always need to be really complex. You can do it in a very simple way as well.
And from what you've been saying, I gather that probably the dosages are pretty important.
Yeah, the dosages are really important. When we're using adaptogens, so remember one of the four N's was that they're non-toxic. That's one of the mandatory aspects of an adaptogen. So it has to be non-toxic for long-term use. And that's, again, almost a unique characteristic of an adaptogen. Most other herbs are designed to be used for shorter periods of time. Adaptogens are designed to be used long-term or indefinitely. Like I said, to cite myself as an example, I've been taking ashwagandha pretty much every day for, I don't know, decades. And I'll do it until I die unless things change. And that's what they're designed to be used as, but at the right dose. So an optimal dose for tapping into all of the benefits we've just spoken about on a long-term basis is somewhere between 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day. Okay, that's the magic number, really. And most manufacturers, licensed, you know, certified manufacturers, will capsulize these herbs in 500 milligram capsules. So typically you go to your health food shop, or you buy your ashwagandha or whatever you're going to use. You might take two capsules in the morning with breakfast, and that will help to regulate your physiology through the day. And then another 1,000 milligrams in the evening with dinner, and that will help to then regulate your physiology through the night. You get up in the morning and you repeat. So you've got this continual cycle where you're never having more than about a 12-hour window of consuming these adaptogens. And if you're having 1,000 milligrams in the morning, 1,000 milligrams in the evening, that is non-toxic, it's safe, it's tested. That's how they're designed to be consumed and designed to be used. But you wouldn't start taking these at, you know, 5,000 milligrams a day long-term, unless it was under individualized prescribing from a clinician. So 1 to 2,000 milligrams a day is where you want to be hovering dose wise.
Interesting. So much against the flow of some of the current thinking, which is finally trying to get off the idea of giving people drugs for the rest of their life and do something different. Yeah. And even with supplements, you know, a lot of people would think the same way, that supplements should be for short-term use. We shouldn't really be taking the same single substances or a multivitamin or something forever. These you're recommending the other way, and that's very interesting. And I suppose it points to their nature as a kind of food in a way, in that they, you described them, one of the four factors they've got to be able to show is actually being nutritious, really, of being constant benefit. So it's like a good food you might have every day. Very interesting. Do you want to say a bit more about this thing about taking them long term? Because, you know, from what you're saying, it sounds like if you live in a developed country, well, you might as well have some.
Yeah, and it's interesting you said that, Robin, because if I think back around, we've done so many talks and webinars and things about adaptogens over the years, because it's the area of herbal medicine that excites me and interests me the most. And when you open it up to a panel or an audience, usually one of the first questions that come out is, are you not just going from the frying pan to the fire? Are you not just creating dependency? Rather than dependency on a steroid, we're putting dependency on an adaptogen. And it's, to me, it's a bit of a, it's not that the answer is wrong, it's that the question is wrong. Because that's like saying, well, do you know what? I'm not going to have carrots ever again, because I've had carrots every day for the last, 30 years, and I don't want to be dependent on them. So I'm not going to eat them. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Or broccoli or coffee. These aren't synthetic crutches that we become addicted to. And that's the other thing to point out. You can't develop addictions to these herbs. You don't get withdrawals upon removal. But to have this idea of dependency and not be, they're not designed for long-term use, that doesn't make any sense. It's like saying, I'm not going to exercise, I'm not going to get good sleep, I'm not going to eat my seven a day or whatever it is. These are foods. And it's interesting, in America, the FDA classifies adaptogens as food supplements, not herbal supplements. Mm. And that speaks volumes, because they should be perceived in the way we perceive these adaptogens should be as foods, things we consume daily to strengthen and nourish the body, rather than herbal medicine, which in my mind are things we take for shorter periods of time when things go wrong. And then when things get better, we wean off of them. And that's the complete opposite of how adaptogenics. So to contextualize it from the Ayurvedic perspective, in Ayurveda, most adaptogens have the label as something called rasayanas, rasayanas. And the conceptual translation of a rasayana is that which destroys aging and disease. A rasayana is that which destroys aging and disease. So foods like coconut oil, extra virgin olive oil, nuts, interestingly, all of which have very robust Western evidence to show how they support longevity. But these herbs are also classified as rasayanas. So ashwagandha, rhodiola, etc. They're classified, yes, as adaptogens, but above and beyond that as rasayanas. Why? Because if they're used long term, continually at the right dose, they slow aging and they prevent disease. But that's with the caveat that they're used continually. They don't have that impact if they're used sporadically, or you use it for a month and stop for a month, because these herbs don't work quickly. Adaptogens don't work quickly. Echinacea works within about 72 hours. These build up over time. So you need to be, within about 2 or 3 weeks of using them, your body's starting to be changed by them. But it's when you start using them month after month that becomes the status quo. It becomes the default setting. So it's imperative that everyone understands that they're designed to be used like this. And it makes no sense to say it creates a dependency, because that's viewing them in the wrong light. Really important.
Fair comment. Yeah. Okay. So look, we've got a little bit of time left. I want to talk about adaptogens and cancer, the key uses for them. I mean, there's pretty obviously a case from what you've already said for anybody who's going through cancer and cancer treatment to look at these. But there must be quite specific situations and challenges that they're good for. Do you want to just talk about the ways you might use them?
Yeah, I think there's two areas particularly where adaptogens really stand out. And they are during, and I'll talk about them separately, during chemotherapeutic treatment with the safety net in place, and then even more so at the end of cancer treatment, whether that's hormone, radiotherapy, chemotherapeutic, or immunotherapy. They're the two areas where I think we should immediately be thinking about adaptogens, okay? Why? So I think we've touched on it briefly, but during chemotherapy saves lives, and this isn't anything to do with being anti-chemotherapy, but chemotherapy is toxic and it puts a huge load on the body above and beyond the benefits it affords. And it moves us out of this homeostasis model again. It puts huge tax on the liver, on the detoxification pathways, on the immune system. Remember one of those four N's: nourishing and normalizing. What do we need? What's the buzzword for chemotherapy? It's strengthening, nourishing. We need to be nourishing the body with our senses, with our emotions, with our foods, and also with these herbal medicines to really anabolically strengthen, nourish and tonify the body to better deal with the challenges that chemotherapy can induce collectively, in terms of, again, remember the other N was non-specific. It needs to work upon multiple organ systems. So during chemotherapy, the first gain of adaptogens is it can just nourish the whole body from head to foot. But the more specific benefit is upon these immune variables, because the immune system can take such a huge hit during chemotherapy. It can cause huge problems in terms of having to stop treatment, in terms of hospitalization, in terms of side effects. And very, very clear evidence around how certain adaptogens can help to keep these immune cells elevated. So you can have the correct dose of chemotherapy for the full duration to get maximum benefit without having to stop it because you're neutropenic or whatever it may be. And also hemoglobin. You know, very many, a lot of people going through chemotherapy will have their hemoglobin drop very low. Adaptogens can help to regulate that. So it needs to be done very carefully. You know, you need to have complete clarity and full sign off by the consultant. They need to know exactly what you're using and why. And they need to make sure that they're happy for you to use that. One of the things that's made that much easier is the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, which I'm sure a lot of people would have heard of. They've got a brilliant herbal directory, and it's there for the patient and the healthcare professional. And what we commonly do when people email us is say, yeah, I would suggest ashwagandha. Here's the Memorial Sloan Kettering profile. And it's got all of the drug interactions, all of the side effects, all of the cancer drug risks. And send that to the consultant, because a lot of the time the consultants won't know about these herbs because they haven't got the time to immerse themselves in it. If they trust that website because it comes from where it comes from, it's evidence-based, it's peer-reviewed, and they can say, well, actually, this looks completely safe because you're on chemotherapeutic drug X. That's not listed here. We're having regular blood tests. Let's start it. If things go amiss, we can identify it really quickly. So it needs to be signed off by the consultant. And my experience, about 70% of the time, they're very willing to do that. Okay, so I think that's the first instance where adaptogens become incredibly important. The second one is once you finish, you know, if you think about what about the damage and the some of the trauma that these very important Western cancer treatments do at the end of them, we can be very weak, we can be very very tired, very fatigued. And it's really important to not let that set in. We need to hit it really hard and retonify, strengthen, nourish, rejuvenate the body as quickly as we can once treatment finishes to get that body back into vital pre-cancer health. And adaptogens are a small part of that process, obviously diet and sleep and exercise and fun and laughter and all these things. But adaptogens work at the deeper level, at that biochemical level. And, you know, if I was to get cancer, you know, these are things that I would, without question, be exploring during my treatment. And I would be using very, very aggressively and intelligently once my treatment ended to get me back to where I want to be in terms of my physical health and my mental health as quickly and as effectively as possible. And again, the evidence is there to show how it achieves that. So it's something that I think it's something that everyone should be exploring. I think upon diagnosis, the obvious things to think about are changing our diet and our lifestyle, and that's so important. But I think we need to get these kind of herbal medicines on the same framework. So when we're thinking about integrative cancer care, these adaptogens flag up at the same point in time as diet and as exercise and as meditation. Because in America now, on the East Coast of Australia, that's happening. These cancer centers, the integrative cancer centers, they are advocating these adaptions in the same way they are anti-cancer diets and meditation. But we're not, they are in Germany as well, interestingly, but we're not quite there yet in the UK. And I think we need to increase the dialogue, increase the exposure, increase the awareness about these herbs, because unless you are, most people, you know, if you have no interest in health, no interest in, you know, in wellness, and you develop cancer, I think commonsensically most people will say, I've got to get my diet under control. I need to start moving my body. I need to manage stress. But if you haven't had exposure to this world, very few people are going to think herbal medicines. Right. And we need to bring this in front of people who have no exposure to this world so that they're not missing out, because it's a big thing to miss out on.
Let's hope we're doing a bit of that right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Sneak in the last sort of general question just before we finish. Well, this applies definitely to adaptogens. You've already described how one of these four features of adaptogens is the fact that they're generalized. So this ability to treat a wide range of organs or conditions, traditionally that's been the ground for a lot of sniggering and a kind of hallmark of quackery. Now I sense that we may just be at the very beginning of a change of heart in that, in respect to that position. What do you think?
I think it's like trying to stem the tide now. It's impossible. I think the point of sniggering at these kinds of approaches is long gone. And you just got to look at the functional medicine movement in America. You know, functional medicine is changing the health framework in America. What do they use? They use herbs. And what do they use specifically? They use adaptogenics, almost as standard. Why? Mm. Because the research is there that they affect the cardiovascular system, the gastroenterological system, the nervous system, the immune system, ad infinitum. And that evidence is there. So this idea that they're non-specific, that if you're, you know, if you're stressed and your heart rate is too high, adaptogens can help lower that, whilst at the same time regulating immunity and reducing inflammation. This ability to work upon the whole body. I get the fact that it sounds too good to be true. I completely get that, because it does. And if the evidence wasn't there, I would be on the bandwagon saying this can't be true. It's too good to be true. But the evidence is there. The evidence is there for 3,000 years from a holistic perspective. It's there for the last 70 years from the Western peer-reviewed perspective. This isn't quackery. This is hard science that's been tested at the biochemical level, and it works. And we need to be making the most of it.
Fantastic. So take home messages. If you live in a developed country, seriously consider adaptogens. It'll do something good for you.
I just think it's like I say, all reward and no real risk if you're doing it in the right way with the right dose, as we discussed. I just can't see any argument for not tapping into these benefits. That, to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks so much for this entirely adaptogen-focused chat. Yeah. Very interesting indeed. I'm hoping you've got a few more members signed up to the Adaptogen Club at the end of it. And really great to talk to you again, Sam.
No, thank you so much for having me back. It's a real privilege.
Cheers, bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's hard to miss Sam's enthusiasm for adaptogens. He's made a pretty convincing case that they really are worth investigation. The Yes to Life annual conference is coming up on September the 24th, with the subject this year of finding a deeper connection. This is new territory for us. In fact, it's new territory full stop when it comes to a cancer-focused event on the subject of the more spiritual dimension of our life and its connection with our mental and physical health. This topic has moved significantly in recent times from the realms of New Age thinking or spirituality to become the subject of science, and to be understood for its profound relevance for everyone, and in particular for those faced with an existential threat such as cancer. As always with our conferences, we've got an incredible lineup of inspirational speakers. You'll not be disappointed. And as well, we have experiential workshop leaders. So listen out in the coming weeks here, as some of my guests on the show will be speakers at the conference. It's in central London on the 24th of September, and currently there's an early bird promotion for tickets. To find out more and to book, go to our website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the button that's on the conference banner as it comes around right at the top of the homepage. This will take you to the dedicated event website where you can read all about the event and the speakers, and of course, book your place. Thanks so much for listening today. Do listen again next week when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.